So, I would email him during because, I mean, I was just like, how you doing, sir?
No, yeah, I
am. Thank you for your time.
I'd like to call to order the 1,412th meeting of the Board of Directors, and first item would be approval of the agenda.
There's one item on the agenda which I'd like to move on with the calendar. We're going to deal with the criminal policy amendment change. It's a new item, and I do think it's a matter that requires some discussion. Amendment to the post resolution. I would move that part of the agenda.
Okay, so we'll take it up to the Finance and Administration Committee section and raise it at that time. Ms. Hutchins, certification of various executive sessions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that the board certify to the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting that the board executive session of October 27, 2015, only such matters as authorized for discussion in executive session under Board Laws, Article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which executive session was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the Board. So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Is second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Other, I move that the Board certify to the best of each member's knowledge and
it's on.
It's on. Okay. Well, eat it. There we go.
We turn the volume up.
I move that the board certify to the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting that at the board executive session of November 5th, 2015, at 2:48 p.m., only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive session under Board Bylaws Article 10 and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive session was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered by the board. I move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And we now have a series of minutes. Let me take them in a group. We have the minutes from our last regular meeting, October 22nd. Any comments on those minutes? Not, could I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The next is the special board meeting we held to honor the two individuals who bravely captured the armed robber on board a train. But we have minutes of that as a meeting. Can I have a motion to approve?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And I'll take the four executive session minutes in a block. These are all executive sessions that had to do with personnel matters. I have a motion on block for those four.
Move approval.
You're a second.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Minutes are all approved. Public comment. We have four speakers. And I'll call them in order. Trina Brueger-Leonard. You have 2 minutes.
My name is Trina Brueger-Leonard. I'm a Montgomery County resident. I'm also the author. Today, you have to choose between money and health and safety department. The research is clear. Advertising for alcohol affects the behavior of children and teens. The more young people are exposed to alcohol, the more likely they are to start drinking or they're already drinking. A brand report tested measured alcohol as practically. Since advertising so clearly influences behavior,
Diane Reby.
Good morning, Chairman Downey and members of the board. My name is Diane Reby, and I'm the chair of the U.S. Health Policy
Department. Would you pull the mic up a little bit? Great, thank you.
I'm the chair of the U.S. Health Policy Alliance Coalition, a state coalition working to translate alcohol policy research into public health practice of the shop owners. My goal is pretty simple. As a professional of more than 25 years in this field, and mother and family with young grandchildren living in D.C., I urge you to keep a ban on alcohol advertising. The more ads children see, you know, the more likely they are to drink, to start drinking earlier, and to drink more, and to ultimately suffer alcohol-related issues over their lifetime. I've walked that path sadly with my share of broken young people and their families. Fighting the way of tragic consequences. You must know that the next thing is today, your decision really does matter. I'd like to talk a little bit about the math. We know that the young person begins drinking before age 15, 4 to 5 times more likely to become alcoholic in his lifetime. He will drink heavily, and he and his family will pay a very dear price. We also know that 20% of drinkers drink 80% of the alcohol. So early consumption means greater profits from that consumer later in life. But the good investment for the industry, it is, of course, all of the math. And the study this year, we learned that excessive drinkers cost 50, and I just know, underage drinking, 90% of the time, binging habits is considered excessive. D.C., Maryland, and Virginia cost $12 billion a year, 41% foreign by taxpayers. My family in New York, indeed, it is all of the math. Far outweigh any revenue benefit. 53% of cost to taxpayers for the damage done by industry. The calculating its way to increase profits is just wrong. The minimal revenue simply does not mitigate the financial taxpayers enormous financial. Yes, you should think about the math, but I truly hope that I urge you to think about our students and prioritize them, and I urge you to keep the ban.
Thank you. Bill Braunroth.
Good? Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and board members. My name is Bill Braunroth, a lifetime resident of the Washington area, and I reside in Silver Spring. I'm a former member of the Maryland General Assembly, and during that time represented the state on COGS, Board of Directors, and TPB. I'm here to respectfully request that you continue to keep alcohol advertising off of our treasured metro system. I've dedicated much of my 35-year career to combating alcohol-related problems in our region and nation, starting as a top aide to your former board colleague, Congressman Mike Barnes, a chief sponsor of the National Uniform 21 Minimum Drinking Age Act, signed into law by President Reagan in 1984. It was also during that time that I worked with the congressman on his efforts to help secure the initial funds to build a 101-mile metro rail system. I co-founded the Washington Regional Alcohol Program 30 years ago to bring together top elected officials in the region with the business community, law enforcement, safety and health groups to combat drunk driving and underage drinking. Later, as a member of the House of Delegates, we adopted advanced, we helped advance research-based initiatives to promote public safety, such as teen driving, underage drinking prevention, drug alcohol addiction treatment and prevention programs, as well as investments in livable, walkable, transit-oriented communities. I think we can agree that a robust transit system is the linchpin of of healthy, safe, and sustainable smart growth communities. But by allowing alcohol ads on Metro, our region's 6 million residents, including the many children who use Metro as their school bus, plus the 19 million who visit the nation's capital annually, will likely see train cars and buses wrapped like beer cans crisscrossing our region like rolling billboards. It's not just a matter of the image of the national capital area that we would telegraph the world. It's about the health and safety of the people and families in our region today and for generations to come long after your service on this board is over. Top researchers at the Schools of Public Health at Johns Hopkins and University of Maryland have summarized for you in a letter some of the very large and growing body of independent research that comes to the same conclusion about alcohol being the number one drug of choice among young people, that the more young people are exposed to alcohol ads, the more likely they are to start drinking, or if already drinking, to drink more. We know that there are about 191 deaths associated with alcohol amongst teens in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia each year. Boston pulled back from alcohol advertising. Los Angeles pulled back. Philadelphia has done the same. 15 other metropolitan areas currently also prohibit alcohol advertising on public transit. The fact is, underage drinking is a $1 billion problem annually in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. The states and local jurisdictions in our region are already far short of the resources to adequately address the collateral damage caused by alcohol abuse and dependence, problems that many of us do not typically hear about until it's reported in the news or when there's a knock on the door in the middle of the night when it's too late. And people then ask why, and mothers grieve. And I've known too many of them. These include vehicle crashes, alcohol poisonings, dropping out of school, lost wages, domestic violence, street violence, homelessness, suicides, unwanted, unplanned, and unprotected sexual activity, and increased risks of cancer, heart disease, and stroke. Is the money gained from opening up alcohol ads on the Metro system worth the price we'll surely pay? At best, this high-stakes gamble would be penny-wise and pound-foolish, and I respectfully urge you to shelve this proposal. Thank you all very, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Thanks.
Heidi Page.
Good morning. I just want to speak on my favorite transportation topic, Transport DC, this morning. This has become such a wonderful option for people with disabilities. It is growing. The trip rate is 20% every month. In other words, 10,000 trips in September, 12,000 trips in October. There seem to be, and one of the things that's happening, it's a great savings for the jurisdiction as long as the only people who use it are people who are already using Metro Access, because indeed it's half the cost. But what is happening, the service quality is so high in comparison to Metro Access, many disability advocates and people with disabilities are now enrolling in Metro Access in order to be allowed to use Transport DC. And that worries a lot of people. And I'm hearing concerns, wow, we're growing so fast, too many people. It's budgeted only if we save money, and these are new people. But please remember that they must meet the eligibility through Metro before they're allowed. If they're not qualified to get that service, they won't get it. One of the things that Metro has done to tamp down on the Metro access is ensure that their eligibility process meets all ADA standards. So there are no free rides. So just please remember, although you are offering an option to people with disabilities who rarely have transportation options, the ADA talks about transportation is the linchpin of community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Case. We have now a employee recognition. Salute your service. On behalf of the board, I'd like to take the opportunity to honor two very special Metro employees through the Salute to Service portion of our meeting. Today, as part of our Years of Service program, the board and Metro leadership are recognizing two employees who have been with the authority for 40 years. Before we get to the formal presentation, I'd like to just say a few words about each of these employees. Mr. Forcade couldn't be with us last month, so we're honoring him this month. Mr. James Forcade, would you please? Mr. Forcade began his Metro career in 1975, coming from one of the region's previous private operators, was superintendent of bus maintenance until 2008, when he accepted a new position in the operations training department as a bus maintenance supervisor at Carmen Turner. In 2011, he was promoted to assistant manager of bus engineering and promoted again in 2014 to manager of rail car and bus equipment, really an important job for keeping the service out there for all of our customers. Thank you, Mr. Forcade, for your dedication and commitment to Metro. And now I'd ask Mr. Weeks to stand. Mr. Weeks was hired in 1975 as well as a transit information clerk. In 2005, he became an environmental technician and is responsible for ensuring that we are in compliance with all federal, state, and local environmental regulations. He also assists in the implementation of management plans for hazardous waste contingencies, stormwater management, and spill prevention. And Mr. Weeks, we thank you for your dedication and commitment to this important work for the Metro. We're really grateful for both of your decades of outstanding and steadfast service to our customers and to your fellow employees. Your dedication to Metro and to this region is commendable, and I'd ask each of you to join me, along with the general manager, in the center of the room for a presentation and a photograph. I'll give the chair's report at this time. Today marked a good day for Metro, for our riders, and for the region. We will be appointing a new general manager and chief executive officer. Skip, I thought I went directly on. We'll move now to the Accessibility Advisory Committee and hear from Denise Rush, in lieu of Mr. Sheehan.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Denise Rush, and I'm the first vice chair of the AAC committee. Patrick is not here today, and this is my first time in this position, speaking with the board from my new position. We have already turned in our letter about what we had concerns about to the board. I just want to say we have two issues that I want to bring to the front. One, the DC taxi service. I am a PG resident. The service is really working in DC, and we would like to see the service be accelerated from Maryland and Virginia, and we have the opportunity to have the same taxi service that DC has, and I hope that the board can help us with that. And also, we definitely want to iterate that we are not for the proposal to change the conditional fare card program. That program is working. There is a proposal to make a change to that program, and we really hope that there will not be a change, because that will really affect a lot of the disabled community. So thank you.
Thank you. Report, I was here last night for the awards ceremony that the AAC held, recognizing a number of Metro employees and some of our outside stakeholders. It's a very nice event. Particularly happy that we recognize a good friend of mine, Brian Helfer from USDOT, who's been involved both in stakeholder relationship for the department, but also a long-time career in serving needs of disabilities. Very nice event there. Riders Advisory Council, permission?
Good morning. Today I'd like to talk a little bit, a few words about the quarterly meeting that we had with the Executive Committee of the Board last week, on October 22nd. We have four items from our RX work plan and that I'd like to say a few words about. The first one is fare policy. The RACS fare policy recommendations for fiscal 2017, where the thought is currently underway, came from what we all know about rider frustrations due to the rail service disruptions this year. We recommend no fare increase and automatic fare refunds for riders with what we call extreme and unforeseen service delays. We know that WMATA's reputation with its riders needs a boost. If the board agrees with these policies, we know that there's some serious thought needed about, well, what does no increase exactly mean and what situations would warrant a full or partial refund, and that the RAC is ready and very willing to collaborate on that should the board decide that's the way it wants to go. The second item that we talked about was mobile applications. The riders blame WMATA often for bad data or hard-to-use mobile apps, and they're built by third parties, not by WMATA. We recommend that WMATA be more directly involved, possibly by partnering with the best developers out there or certification program of some kind for a bar for the developers to pass, another way to improve what the riders think of WMATA. The third item is about station management. Metrorail riders all know that as they try to get from point A to point B, sometimes things happen. Sometimes it happens just to one rider who needs help. And so the RAC suggested a few things to make the station managers more available and easier to find. And sometimes a lot of riders are impacted, and the RAC suggested a few things to make it easier for extra station managers to get to trouble spots and better equipped to give riders faster updates when there is some incident that causes a delay. With the station managers being the face of Metro to the vast majority of rail customers, even small improvements can make a very, very big difference. No rider wants a delay, but we hear far less frustration about delays themselves as we do about getting help and information when those delays inevitably happen. The executive committee was supportive of our three recommendations, and we are waiting feedback right now from staff and have high hopes for progress on all three fronts. If you want more detail, anyone that does, they're all documented in detail on the WMATA website under the meeting for that day. There was a fourth topic that we presented jointly with the AAC, and that's priority bus seating and wheelchair accessibility. And I think Patrick is already working, Patrick and his management team, with the staff counterparts on taking that forward. So that's it on the quarterly topics. I just had one more topic of social media. It wasn't ready for the executive committee on the 22nd, but it was discussed by the RAC at our November 4th meeting, and that is to establish a RAC presence on social media. We think that this would provide the RAC with direct feedback from writers on our own initiatives, which would bring us a broader understanding of writer perspectives when we are going to make a recommendation to the board. And we believe that the RAC is uniquely positioned to be a very trusted liaison between writers and WMATA because of our established relationship and our credibility with the board and our ongoing access to the staff. In the current climate of rising frustrations, diminishing ridership, we think that we can improve the perception of WMATA as an organization that cares about the issues facing its riders. The RAC voted unanimously in favor of this proposal, and we're committed to working with the WMATA staff to make it a worthwhile endeavor, something that's different from what the staff is doing and something that complements it. We have a detailed plan, and we're waiting to hear back from the staff so that we can shape it in a way that we will have consensus with the staff and then the support of the board. Finally, just 1 week to Thanksgiving, you have to listen to me quickly say how much we are thankful for the board because they have given all of us on the RAC the ability to make a difference and their support from this particular voice. So thank you. That's it for me. Any questions, comments?
Any questions? Look forward to our next quarterly meeting. We'll talk about the social media issue at that point. I also wanted to thank you for joining us at the meet and greet for our customers at King Street the other night.
Thank you, and I plan to go tonight too. Thank you.
Now, we will be appointing a new general manager and chief executive officer, but before we do that, the board would like to recognize the dedicated service of interim general manager and CEO Jack Reedford. Jack, the board is grateful for your service to this agency and to the region over the past 11 months as our interim leader. We told you it would be a short time. It's been a long time, but I hope for you and for us it's been a good time. You provided tremendous leadership and a steady hand in the fulfillment of the authority's mission during what have been some especially difficult times, guiding the management team through multiple oversight reviews and moving quickly to address recommendations. You acted decisively and set the path to improvement. Along the way, you've also helped renew our regional and federal partnerships that are so important for the betterment of Metro and its customers. You've overseen continued financial reform work, working with the financial team to set the path for improved financial management. And you partnered with the board to ensure adoption of a balanced fiscal 16 budget that did not need fare increases and that did include the purchase of additional rail cars. We appreciate your service to ensure a seamless transition at this important time for the authority. Therefore, I would move the following commendation. Whereas the Board of Directors recognized the need to appoint an interim general manager who could sustain the continuity of WMATA operations in a climate of tight resources, high scrutiny, and difficult decision-making. And whereas the Board called upon Assistant General Manager of Bus Services, Jack Wequa, to serve as the interim general manager at a special meeting of the Board on January 8, 2015, because of the Board's high regard for his demonstrated management ability, considerable experience, and recognized qualities of leadership. And whereas during this time, Mr. Rico has led the organization during difficult times and has provided important leadership for reviews from various oversight organizations, including NTSB, FTA, Government Accountability Office, and has put in place the action plans underway to address these oversight reports. Whereas Mr. Requa renewed collaboration in the region on a number of fronts, particularly Metro's work with the regional fire chiefs and with emergency responders. Whereas he advanced our safety programs, led us to the adoption of the FY16 budget without fare increases or service reductions. He advanced capital funding discussions and championed Metro's customer care initiative. Whereas throughout this extended time, Mr. Requa's selfless commitment and sense of purpose led directly to the smooth continuation of services throughout the region. Therefore, now be it resolved that the WMATA Board of Directors commends Jack Requa for his leadership and service as Interim General Manager, and be it further resolved that the Board offers its sincere gratitude for his selfless dedication and commitment during his tenure as Interim General Manager and Chief Executive Office. I move the resolution and ask our voting members whether there's a second. Any discussion? Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I just think that the board's recognition here is very important, and a really warm thank you to Jack. Jack has stepped forward repeatedly when we've needed help, and this was no exception, and we want to send you off and say thank you again, and we hope you'll stay around for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other comments? Hearing none, we'll have the vote. Mr. Dormshow, you're voting on behalf of Member Price. Right. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? If not, the motion carries. Thank you, Jack. Now I would ask that Mr. Paul Wiedefeld join us.
Mr. Chairman, can I have a
Jack, question? Yes.
You know, I just want to say, I want to say to the chairman and to the members of the board, thank you again for this commendation, but it has been an honor to be selected by the board to provide the leadership of this fine organization while the search for permanent general manager was underway. Looking back over the past 10 plus months, neither the board nor the staff sat back and waited for the arrival of the new general manager. Yes, we've had to deal with and continue to deal with difficult challenges, but at the same time, working together, we were able to, as Chairman mentioned, adopt a fiscal year 2016 budget without a fare increase or an adjustment in service. We gained approval for the option of the additional 227,000 series rail cars. We finalized the award and began the delivery of over 275 new replacement buses. We fully cooperated with the NTSB in their investigative process and continue to be responsive as they continue their efforts. With the new leadership team in place, our finance staff has worked long and hard to make significant progress to meet the financial reporting requirements of the FDA as a result of the FMO. The operating and safety departments provided timely responses to the FDA's SMI process and have met every deadline to date, and are working daily with FDA staff to make our system even safer for our customers and employees. On December 3rd, a budget will be presented to the board for consideration. Many difficult decisions were made to trim the administrative expenses within this budget in preparations for the discussions with you over the next several months. I believe the budget is realistic and proposes to continue services at the current level without fairing. I want to publicly thank the staff for their support and continued efforts to do the right thing and deal with the issues that they have arisen over these months. They're prepared to advise and support Paul on day one or before, and will be there for him going forward. Finally, I don't need to remind you that the rail system is safe and will be safer as thousands of employees work hard every day to make it so. But little is written or said about 7,000 customers served daily by Metro Access, or the 460,000 patrons of the Metro bus service provided every weekend. All three services make up the system that the region needs to support the full system of Metro. Paul, we welcome you aboard. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Now I'll ask Mr. Wiederfel to join us. Glad to see you here, Paul. I know I speak for all of us when I say the board is very pleased to have Paul at the helm of the agency, and we are strong in our support for him. He will help us build to a new standard of safety, reliability, and financial stability for our system. How do we know this? Paul's experience speaks for itself. He brings 30 years of transportation knowledge and regional exposure to his new role at Metro. He has both public and private sector transportation management experience, formerly serving as the CEO of Baltimore-Washington International Thurgood Marshall Airport, where he managed the operations that served a record 22.7 million passengers in calendar year 2012. He oversaw the largest expansion in the airport's history, including the design and construction of a 26-gate terminal for Southwest Airlines, really leading BWI's growth as the busiest passenger airport in the Washington metropolitan region and recognized as one of the best airports in the country. Prior to leading BWI, Paul's career included service as administrator of the Maryland Transit Administration, where he managed day-to-day operations of the nation's 13th largest transit system, including MARC commuter rail, subway, light rail, buses, and paratransit. He's also spent a decade in the private sector with extensive experience in engineering project management. With Paul leading Metro, the board will continue in our governance and oversight role in a way that will help him succeed in running the operations of Metro, better serving our riders, rebuilding faith in the system, and restoring credibility with our funders and our stakeholders. Our commitment to the region and to Paul is that we as the board will ensure he has the resources he needs at his disposal as we strengthen Metro's operations and business management while improving safety performance and restoring service reliability. I would now ask the board to formally appoint Paul J. Wiederfeld as Metro's General Manager and Chief Executive Officer. I would move the following resolution. Whereas, pursuant to Compact Section 9A, the General Manager and Chief Executive Officer is the person responsible for all activities of the authority subject to the policy direction of the WMATA Board of Directors. And whereas the GM CEO is an officer of WMATA, and whereas mutually acceptable terms for retaining Paul's services have been negotiated, now therefore be it resolved, the board authorizes the board chair to execute the contract with Paul J. Wiederfeld to serve as Metro's GM and CEO, consistent with the attached term sheet, and be it further resolved that Paul J. Wiederfeld is hereby appointed GM and CEO, and be it finally resolved that as a resolution dealing with internal management, this resolution shall be effective immediately. Do I have a second from one of the voting members? Second? Any discussion? If not, we'll go to a vote. I believe we've been asked for a roll call vote.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. Okay. How this works is
I will call the roll.
I will call the roll in alphabetical order with the presiding officer voting last. So that would
be you.
Okay. Mr. Corcoran?
Aye.
Mr. Dormstow? Mr. Evans?
Yes.
Mr. Goldman?
Yes.
Ms. Harley? Ms. Hudgens? Mr. Goning?
Aye.
And Mr. Downey?
And the chairman votes aye. We are unanimous in our support of our new CEO. Paul, welcome to Metro, and I'd ask you to join me in the center of the room so we can officially swear you in. Please repeat after me. I, Paul J. Wiederfeld.
I, Paul J. Wiederfeld.
Do hereby solemnly swear.
Do hereby solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the provisions of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority Compact.
And the provisions of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transportation Compact.
And that I will faithfully and impartially discharge and perform.
That I will faithfully Discharge and perform.
All duties incumbent on me as General Manager and Chief Executive Officer.
All duties incumbent upon me as General Manager and Chief Executive Officer.
Of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority.
Of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations. Thank you. This concludes the chair's remarks. And Paul, I'll now turn the floor over to you for the GM CEO report.
Very good. Again, thank you. I'm so excited to take on this challenge. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I really do. Is anyone here?
Very good. How's that? Much better? Okay. Again, I want to thank you for this is just so exciting for me and my family. We are so looking forward to working with all of you going forward. I do just want to make a few comments. First of all, I want to make sure everyone understands my immediate priorities for the agency, and that will be the first and foremost is always safety and security. It is, you know, obviously, as we've seen in the last week, the security part is very important, but clearly the safety, we should never be dealing with some of the issues we've been dealing with. Safety is just something that we do constantly. It will be part of our culture, and we'll get that in order very quickly. The second priority is reliability. Clearly, we have not been meeting the standards that we all expect to be met, and we are going to focus on that, obviously, with laser precision to get that right. And then finally, the fiscal house needs to be put in order. We have to get that done, not only because we're being scrutinized by different agencies, but it's to run a business. You have to understand your financials and have them in order. So that's fairly simple. A lot of the issues that we've gotten to have not come overnight, and they're not going to be solved overnight, that's for sure. In talking to a number of people around the region, the unfortunate fact is we've lost a lot of our credibility as an agency, and to be frank, as a board. And so we need to move beyond that, and to achieve that, it's going to take a partnership. It's going to take a partnership with me and the board. It's going to take a partnership with me and the employees. It's going to take a partnership with me and the riders, and the federal agencies, and the elected officials, and the state and local and regional agencies. All of us have to attack this together, and I know we will, and I'm certain we will. The other observation I would like to make is I have sensed, obviously, a frustration out there. Clearly, riders are frustrated when we do not perform, and that falls on us. But the bigger frustration that concerns me and is also the opportunity is there's a frustration out there that, hey, this system is so important to this region that if we don't do this right, it hurts the entire region. It hurts the economy of the region. It hurts the accessibility in the region. It hurts the environment in the region. All those things are what we need to focus on to get this system back to what we all want, which is the world-class system. It has been and will be again. So with that, I thank you. Thank you for the appointment, and I look forward to working with everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move on to the business agenda. Recognize.
Yeah. Before we move on to the business agenda, just I want to extend for myself personally, I think the members of the executive committee, thanks to you, Mr. Chairman, who has led us through this process for the last few months. Yeoman's work in this process.
Speak up.
I'm sure you want me to speak up. I was saying I want to express thanks on behalf of myself and the other members of the executive committee to you,
Mr. Chairman, who's led us through this process of coming and selecting Mr. Wiedefeld, Paul Wiedefeld, as our new General Manager, Chief Executive Officer. You've sort of set the timetable. You've sort of led us in the process of interviewing candidates, and you've done a yeoman's job at the end in negotiating with Mr. Wiedefeld a contract so that he could be here today and accept this appointment as the General Manager, CEO. So hip, hip, hooray, and three cheers to you. Thank you.
Thank you. And it was still going as of 8 o'clock last night. We wrapped up everything, and Paul is here today, and we'll be here for the next 4 years.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I might just offer a small comment from the alternate seats, and I know that I speak for the 8 of us who serve in this capacity, who are as dedicated to this agency as our principals are, to say how happy we are to have completed this process, how supportive we are from our jurisdictions of you as our new general manager, and how much we, from the point of view of the people we represent, how much we are delighted to have you join this team. No one should think from that roll call vote that there is any question that all 16 members of this board are 100% behind this appointment. And I just felt it very important to say that on the record today. We all participated, and we are all behind you. So thank you for joining us.
Any other comments? If not, I will pass the mic to Ms. Hutchins for the report of the Customer Service and Operations Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the following action item was referred to the board at the November 5th Customer Service and Operations Committee. Approval of the public hearing staff report and the Title VI Equity Analysis 2016 Bus Service State of Good Repair Operations, and the resolution is included in our book. The committee recommends approval of the following actions related to the 2016 bus service, approving the changes of the Metro bus service to improved effectiveness, performance, and customer satisfaction, fare changes to the Transit Link card, and to allow free rail transfer for certain bus customers, and the Title VI equity analysis. Moved approval, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there a second? Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
I will call your attention in the board material to the report on the outreach that was done. I think it's exemplary in terms of what we can do, and I think we should make it available to other agencies as a model for outreach and this kind of service and fair deliberations. All in favor?
Aye.
And turn it over then to Chairman Evans from the Finance Committee, for the Finance Agenda, and also the first consent item.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, the following actions were referred to the board at the November 5th meeting of the Finance and Administrative Committee. Advertising and retail policy review. The staff sought board approval of 3 revisions to Metro's advertising policies and a 4th revision to Metro's policies on concessions and the sale of food and beverages in Metro Rail stations. The 4th resolution was withdrawn from consideration, so I will move approval of each of the 3 advertising items separately. First, a resolution closing Metro's commercial advertising space to issue-oriented ads, including political, religious, and advocacy ads, and adopting this change into our commercial advertising guidelines. I'd like to move approval. Is there a second?
Second. That first motion, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, that resolution is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Second, a resolution expanding Metro's use regulation advertising inventory to allow digital advertising panels, exterior and interior train wraps, and direct application banner ads in Metro Rail stations and Metro bus transit centers. I'd like to move approval.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted.
Third, Mr. Chairman, a resolution to revise the commercial advertising guidelines to allow alcohol advertising in Metro's commercial advertising space, provided that the advertising complies with the laws of the applicable jurisdiction. I'd like to move approval.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
I'm not going to vote against this resolution, but I do want to point out that Maryland has an executive order that bans advertising of alcoholic beverages in public transit systems. The interpretation of that executive order would be that any rail car moving into Maryland would not be allowed to carry any alcohol advertising. Any bus that transverses a jurisdictional line into Maryland would not be able to carry alcohol, and no station would be able to carry any alcohol. The station in Maryland would be allowed to carry any alcohol advertising. With those restrictions, which are, as Chairman Evans explained, things that this resolution requires compliance with, I question whether this will be a very effective policy, since it's probably going to bar any advertising on any rail car, since the rail cars all go across jurisdictional boundaries. And it's probably going to bar alcohol advertising on a lot of buses, since a lot of buses move across jurisdictional boundaries from the district into Maryland and vice versa. So that while I'm not going to vote against this, I do believe the staff should come back to us early in the next year with an actual plan to affect alcohol advertising under and in light of the Maryland executive order restriction, so that the board can take a look whether such a policy is realistic and feasible and worthwhile in light of the concerns expressed by those citizens generally and in the public speakers at the start of today's session. Thank you.
Would it make sense of Mr. Dorn?
I don't have a legal interpretation. This is a legal statement that was given to me by officials of the Maryland Department of Transportation, including the highest executive official there, the secretary, as to whether under federal law the compact would preempt state law. That will be something I'll let various attorney generals in Maryland and our general counsel opine on.
Okay, so I think we should proceed, vote on it, and then we can sort it out when we get to it, the time to sort it out. So let's vote.
Been moved and seconded?
Moved and seconded. Aye.
The chairman would vote no on this.
Okay, and lastly, Mr. Chairman, I assume it passes, right?
Yep.
Okay. Lastly is an amendment to the FY 2016-17 Capital Improvement Program. Staff sought board approval of a proposed amendment to the FY 2016 to 2021 Capital Improvement Program to reallocate budget authority across existing projects in order to advance key safety efforts and accommodate project cost increases. The amendment requires no net additional funding. I'd like to move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The item carries. On the consent calendar, there is an item to amend the policy for procurement of parts. We have a Maryland member has asked for the opportunity to discuss and to amend that item, so I will call it up now and we'll deal with it. Mr. Shackelford is here if there are questions.
What's the proper procedure? Should I make the amendment to the resolution?
Let's
the staff introduce it. What's the...
I think we need to put the resolution before us, so we'd order the resolution to be before us and open it for amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just want to first introduce the amendment which I would propose, which is a product of some work done by both Maryland members as well as members from the district. And the effect of the amendment would be threefold. First, it would expand upon the items to be treated in quarterly reports by the chief procurement officer to include information on the dollar value of parts purchased and the percentage of total purchases that quarter, and it would provide a notification of any staff projection that as a result of such parts purchases, there may be an increase in the jurisdictional funding needed for that year's operating or capital budgets. Second, it would shorten the period during which parts could be enrolled in the program from December 31, 2018, under the staff or general manager's proposal to December 31, 2016. And finally, the amendment would provide for staff, and in this case it would be, I think, the chief procurement officer, to report back to the committee of the board in January of next year with further information on this bridge parts procurement program, the steps other transit agencies use to competitively procure parts in accordance with FDA policies, and how WMATA will improve its procurement practices to ensure that parts may be sourced consistent with FDA policies. Thank you. I'm moving that amendment.
Discussion on the amendment?
To get the discussion started, because I think since this is not a matter that went through our normal committee processes, there should be some conversation on the record explaining why it's being brought forth and what it would do. So the first question I would have, and I direct it to the general manager, and he can determine who would provide the answer, is what is there in the federal competitive bidding rules that makes it impossible to buy spare parts expeditiously, and is this the cause of our having 60 rail cars parked now for lack of spare parts?
I'll let Mr. Shackelford answer. I think one of the things that we want to point out is that we're not opposed to the policy that the board approved last year. It's just a matter that we need a transition time to get in place to where we can meet all of the federal requirements. And as a result of trying to reach those requirements, we, you know, it is delaying the process of purchasing parts. We need the buses and the cars on the tracks and carrying passengers. And so we're looking for a little bit of latitude to try to procure parts in a very professional manner at the best possible price, but not to meet all of the requirements that were placed upon us with the passage of the resolution last year. But I'll ask Mr. Shackelford to comment.
We have complied with the federal procedures. The resolution that we're trying to get some relief from is the one that is requiring me to apply those federal procedures to non-federal source dollars. The nature of the transit parts procurement is that there is an inordinately high number of non-competitive sole source procurements. The federal standards promote a high standard, a high bar, to obtain competition and to meet Buy America and disadvantaged business enterprise requirements. That takes more time to do. And basically what I'm asking for is this relief that would allow me to fill up the pipeline again, legitimately doing price reasonableness, but going to non-competitive sources, essentially sole source. And if I can get that relief, I can still, on the concurrent track, do the procurement standards of federal provisions being in there. And then that would bring more suppliers, competitive priced, and making awards. And that's the difference. And I've been complying with that from the year I've been here, and it's not been successful. I think you all realize that because it's taking longer, the parts bins are not full stock levels that they need to be. That's why I need that relief.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you for asking.
I guess the follow-up question would be, just one more question on my side. The follow-up question would be, in your workup materials, you state that the policy change may result in an increase in jurisdictional funding or displacement of other operating or capital needs. of the authority. And I would like some explanation to better understand why this change of policy would have that kind of an implication or repercussion.
Mr. Goldman, I would ask my colleague, Mr. Anosiki, if he would, to address that. Thank you.
Thank you, John. That comment highlights the fact that increased inability to utilize federal resources for pirates will ultimately translate to the jurisdictions providing additional resources for the operating budget. As you know, federal capital dollars allow for both construction as well as pads. And up to this point, we've used federal dollars to pay for some of these pads, which means they have to meet the federal requirements, both with respect to competition as well as the federal clauses. So to the extent that there's increased use of non-federal sources in order to meet the immediate needs for pads, we just wanted to highlight to the board that there is the potential that it may translate to additional requests from the jurisdictions.
And to avoid giving you that blank check was the purpose of part of this amended resolution, so that if you feel that it's heading in that direction where there would be an increase in jurisdictional funding, you would be required to give us some notification to the board so we can consider how as a board we want to respond in terms of perhaps changing what would be otherwise funded by in the operating of the capital.
That's fine. Mr. Goldman, if I could add, I think by the staff reporting back to the board on a quarterly basis, we can track the expenses and hopefully deal with the concerns that Dennis has raised. I think that we can address those with the board as we go through this process if the consent item is approved.
Thank you.
Mr. Augustine.
I'm concerned about the classification and reclassification of purchases that we've seen, and that it's federal today and then it's not federal tomorrow, and I'm just concerned about that when we get audited and things like that. I mean, how do you address that?
With respect to compliance in terms of financial reporting, and the use of federal funds, it is my responsibility to make sure that we are tracking the use of federal resources timely and appropriately. I assume you were referring to some of the FMO findings, which relates to the use of federal parts and to the extent that some of those parts were not eligible for reimbursement. As I've told this board in the past, we have addressed that challenge by making sure that there are no subsequent reclassifications, which was the source of that particular problem. What John is requesting is a proactive exemption from a policy of this board, which means that with appropriate planning, we can actually time and track expenses with respect to capital projects, and therefore ensure that there are no subsequent issues with respect to classifications in the back end.
And additionally, we have talked to the FTA about the processes that we're suggesting here, and there I think there's no concern of how we're using local dollars in this process.
So as I read the proposal, this is a bridge to a time where we will have better control on what our spare parts needs are. Obviously, this is a predictable amount of parts over a particular time, and that once we get over this bridge, we can use the federal procurement processes, which may be more helpful in getting competition, but certainly will be helpful in avoiding any problems of this bucket is federal, this bucket is not. So it is temporary, and there is a management plan to get us back to federal procurement on a basis that predicts what we need and has it available when it's needed.
Thank you.
Any other comment?
Yes, Mr. Corcoran.
If I may, I would actually like to commend Mr. Shackelford for coming up with a solution to a problem that has been deriding the agency, and thank you for taking proactive action in recommending this to improve service and safety, which is what we're about. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Any other comments? If not, the vote would be on the amendment to the motion. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? No. And therefore, go to a vote on the motion itself as amended. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None.
You need a move and a second.
Can't hear you.
You need a move and a second. You can't just take the vote. You need a move and a second.
All right. Well, initially we put it before us. We amended it, and now we're voting.
Let's be clear for the point of the record.
Okay, for the record, can we have a motion to vote on the amended resolution?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. With that behind us, we move to the other item on the consent calendar, which is simply to correct a typographical error in the resolution permitting our cooperation in the Potomac Yard reimbursable project.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Any discussion? Hearing a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No, the motion carries. Reports. Mr. Evans, report from the district.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a somewhat of a report on a travel I just took. As many people know, the mayor, myself, and others took a trip to China for a week last week. And as part of the trip, we went to Shanghai. And as part of that trip, we rode on the metro. And so I wanted to give you some observations, particularly Paul, to share with the staff as we go forward, particularly on the advertising side. First of all, the metro was clean, spotless, modern. They started building it around the same time we did in the 1970s. It's certainly much larger than ours. But what struck me when I asked them this, they are building 10 additional lines in the next 5 years. They are expanding enormously. My obvious question to the people we were with is, who's paying for this? And, of course, the Chinese government, the national government, and the local government are paying billions of dollars to continue to expand their metro. On the advertising side, there seemed to be advertising everywhere. They had the screen advertising, the full motion advertising. There was advertising in the stations. There was even advertising as we went through the tunnels. On the walls in the tunnels, you could see advertising. They had handheld things hanging down where you would hang on to as you're riding the trains. And there was advertising on every one of those things that was hanging down. On the sale of food, they sold food and drink in the stations. And again, I only bring that up because we're not looking at doing that, but their trains and et cetera were spotless, even though they did do that. So I say all this in saying, as we go forward with what we've approved today, that's a system we ought to take a look at. How are they doing it? I know it's hard to come by, you know, accurate numbers, but how are they doing it? What kind of revenues are they getting? What sense does it make to advertise in the tunnels? If people really look at that, would people be willing to advertise in our tunnels? And it may even, you know, somehow be worth somebody taking a look at this, maybe even firsthand, to see how it all works. Because it didn't come across as distasteful. I didn't feel like I was in a system that was like out of control by any means. More the opposite. It seemed to be all working quite well, and it's something that we don't do here at all. So if we're going to go down that road and realize much additional revenue from this advertising and sale of things, and they seem to sell everything in these stations, this is a great example of a system that, in my view, for the brief time we were there, seemed to work. That's all. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I had the privilege also to visit Shanghai, Beijing, Guangzhou, and Hong Kong a couple of summers ago, and my observation is the same as yours. Highly utilized systems, they're building a lot, they run efficiently, and they do have a lot of advertising. I guess it's the private sector part of the Chinese economy that is thriving. They're becoming a consumer economy. I also would note, and I think it was probably true when you were there, in Shanghai, all passengers are screened going into the system.
And the fares were very low.
Yes.
Again, very low.
Right. Mr. Goldman, Maryland?
Yes, two matters this morning. First, on behalf of my colleagues from Maryland and the Maryland delegation, and myself, I want to welcome a fellow Marylander, Paul Wiedenfeld, to Washington as the new general manager. I hope that as he transitions from Baltimore, as a Baltimore native, become a resident of the national capital area, he'd consider switching some of his allegiances in terms of sports teams to the unifiers of this community, along with Metro, the Nats, and the Redskins. So we'll leave that for you as a little milestone for you to walk along as you come over the next year.
If I could, I love the Capitals and the Wizards. They're really great.
It's going to be tough, but we'll work on the Nats and the Redskins. Maybe if we get them to change their name, it'll make it easier for you to do. Second of all, the state of Maryland announced this week that it received four proposals for construction of the Purple Line, and that if one of those proposals is accepted next year and approved by the government, that construction of the Purple Line will begin in 2016 and could be completed by 2020. And at that time, the Purple Line will, of course, run across the Maryland suburbs, connecting Metro and the Red Line from Bethesda and the Silver Spring Station all the way across to the Blue Line in New Carrollton. That would be a great addition to the public transit system in the nation capital, and we'll be watching it as it progresses over the next few years. Thank you.
You, Ms. Hutchins?
No.
No report. On the federal side, I'll just report that Congress is maybe under their new leadership beginning to work. Conferees met yesterday on the House and Senate version of the reauthorization bills that are pending, and there is at least some hope that they will come up with funding on both a steady and to some degree increased basis. Right now the debate is whether to go forward with a six-year bill at current levels or to use the resources they have to build a five-year bill at enhanced resources. I think most people who are working on this have said more is better, sooner is better, and 5 years is a long time. So hopefully they can find that higher level. Also note that the Senate began work yesterday on the appropriations bill for transportation, which already carries the full funding for our program, but it gets them to conference where they can hopefully bring the House up to a higher level. So there is some action, and they hope to finish this before the end of the year and before the programs expire again.